Hello and welcome to the Podfather. Today's episode promises to be a good time.
Hey.
I'm Jordan.
I'm Alex.
And we're very excited to talk about another Safdie Brothers movie today.
Speak for yourself.
Well, I'm very excited to talk about another Safdie.
So am I.
We were excited. So now we've seen it. Are we still excited?
Amplified.
Okay. That tells you a little something about what we thought about the movie. Since our last episode, the Oscars occurred the day that we released it.
Yes. It's been 2 weeks.
And I already don't give a shit.
Did you give a shit at the time?
Only Bong. I care about Bong.
I happen to have the day off work, so I watched it all live.
Yeah.
And I wanted to give a quick summary, because you didn't get to watch it live. I think you caught up with all the videos later.
Yeah.
It was actually a really good awards show, which is kind of surprising for the Oscars because they've been kind of up and down in recent years. They didn't have a host, as we spoke about. It was just presenter after presenter, usually in a duo format, which most of the time was pretty funny, like Steve Martin and Chris Rock opened it.
Mm-hmm.
But then we had a little chat about the James Corden and Rebel Wilson thing, which was a bit weird.
Yeah.
They came out as cats. But mostly it was a good show. One thing that I didn't like was the Eminem Lose Yourself performance.
I didn't even bother watching that.
It was very out of context. It made no sense. Elton John, who we're actually seeing in concert tonight.
Yeah, in a few hours we will be, you know, doing the Crocodile Rock.
He performed his song from Rocket Man, which won the award, so he's done very, very well. So overall, a pretty good show, right? It was a pretty good show. The main takeaway that we would probably want to talk about is that Bong Joon-ho won, like, what, four awards, Parasite?
Ties for equal wins for one person at an Oscars night with Walt Disney.
Wow, he tied with Walt. Amazing. You're happy that Joker didn't win Best Picture, right?
Oh, of course. I'm happy that it didn't win many things at all. Joaquin won, which we knew he would.
Yeah.
Because, like I said, it was the obvious choice. And possibly
a deserved career award. Maybe not deserved for that particular performance.
Yeah,
but
good on
him. He's done some good stuff.
And also Brad Pitt won his first acting Oscar, which was really exciting.
Yeah, do you know what he won previously for?
Producing 12 Years a Slave.
That's right.
So that, yeah, there were some really nice moments and all the Elsas did their little song.
From Frozen.
I didn't watch that, but they did it.
Yeah, I was pretty bored. No offense. I was pretty bored by all the original songs except the Elton John one, frankly.
That's fair.
But that's just me.
But now it's time for a new year of film and, you know, which is really exciting.
And we have a really exciting announcement. Can you shed a little bit of light on what the current award season has inspired us to do?
Oh, yes. So there's one, the most important awards ceremony is still yet to come. And that's the Podfather Awards. So our next episode will be a live episode. Stay tuned for the exact date. We've got a very special guest. Should we reveal it or it's someone you've heard before? It's probably no surprise.
It's Daniel Lamont.
And we're going to be talking about Seven, David Fincher's Seven.
S-E-7-E-N.
It's a movie I've never seen before. I've tried to watch it once, but it was super rainy. And spoilers, the movie starts kind of super rainy. And given David Fincher's stylistic choices in terms of sound design, with the on-screen rain and the real rain belting on my roof, I couldn't hear a damn word Morgan Freeman was saying. So I turned it off and I'm yet to watch it again.
Is that seriously your experience?
No, that's seriously. So I'm really excited to watch this movie. I'm excited to talk about it. I think it's one that a lot of people have seen.
Yeah, it's one of those films where I was actually having a chat to some friends today and I revealed I hadn't seen it and they were all like, what? You haven't seen Seven, bro? And they started quoting it and all this shit. And I was
What's
like,
in the box?
Yeah, that's what they said. And I was like, I don't know what that means.
So
what is in the box?
We're gonna watch that and then talk about it live next episode. And we're going to do the Podfather Awards.
So it's going to be a big episode, star-studded episode.
Fourth birthday
extravaganza.
Yeah.
Now, for the listeners, the way the Podfather Awards is going to work, we haven't quite finalized everything yet because we're lazy, but here's what we know so far, and there's going to be some audience participation. So listen closely. In the next couple of days when this is released, there's going to be a way for you to vote on Facebook and Twitter. There'll be like a Google form or something. So look out for that. You can vote in these following categories. These are the Podfather Awards inaugural edition. First, we have best film. Simple. This is all from 2019 mostly. So best film from 2019.
And is this films that we've reviewed?
This is any film.
But that came out last year.
That came out in 2019.
Oh, so it's not so
this
just
is, this
like
is the equivalent of best
so
picture.
So Hustlers doesn't count or anything. It's not movies that we've
no,
seen.
No, it's best film that came out in 2019.
In Australia though, right? Because we're in Australia. We use Australian release dates.
Sure, let's do that. In Australian release dates.
Yep.
Second award is best TV series or season. So it might be a really great, might be the Better Call Saul or something, or it might be...
That had a hiatus, but it comes back this week.
Well, there you go. Or it might be Watchmen or whatever. Third award, the Jeffrey Jacob Abrams Award for Outstanding Achievement in the Milking of Intellectual Property. So what film or franchise or piece of media in 2019...
has just jumped the shark.
...was the most cringy to sell toys and shit.
Yeah.
Then we have Best Streaming Service. So, you know, value for money, best releases, what gave you the most enjoyment. Yep. This is obviously probably going to be out of Amazon, Disney, Apple, Netflix.
Urethra.
What?
Honestly, for me, that's the streaming service that never fails. Sorry, we're going lowbrow today, folks.
Wow. Then we have best Podfather guest, who may or may not... be there. The best guest could be there next week when we do this.
He also may be listening to this episode.
So look out for that. Outstanding performance in TV or film. So this is like best actor or actress. It's just going to be outstanding performance in best TV or film. So whatever performance of last year really resonated with you. And then finally, we have most scrumptious biscuit.
Yep. And now, this one works a little different.
This is going to be all the biscuits we've ever reviewed for the first time. Then in subsequent years, we're just going to do... So we won't include any biscuits that we've done in 2020. We'll do best biscuits up until 2019. Then from next year on, it'll be the most scrumptious biscuit of 2020. Then 2021, then 2022, 2023, until we're old.
Until we're old. All right. So speaking of biscuits, I hope you're all excited, by the way, for
yes.
the awards. Please get around it.
Please vote. Make sure you vote.
Because
we
the
want
audience...
some, yeah.
You matter to us and you will matter to these awards. It's not just Alex and Jordan think, because we don't.
We don't think. Some of these awards could be swayed by audience vote. So yeah. Make sure you get out there and click a few buttons.
Yeah. And speaking of clicking buttons, I'm hoping to push your buttons today, Alex, with my biscuit choice.
Oh, no.
This is another one of those Arnott's where they take a classic and they try to... spruce it up. These okay. were half price at Woolies and Coles in the last week or so.
How do you, do you just know that insider industry knowledge because you go to the supermarket?
I go to the supermarket.
And you just take note in your brain of like what's happening?
Yes.
Because it's like you read a magazine or something.
No. I never read a catalogue. I just scour the aisles. And so there's a new range of Tim Tams. I know we've done Tim Tams to death, but there's a new range. So we're going to try one that is good for your heart.
Oh,
Manuka honey.
I'm excited to try these. Yes. My buttons aren't pushed.
I thought, well, I mean, hopefully the good buttons are being pushed.
Yeah, I'm interested. I saw these. I saw a photo of these.
Yeah, I know.
Now, is it like a real Manuka honey? Because that shit's expensive.
That's a really good question.
Manuka honey's not,
Manuka
you know.
Honey and cream. I'm going to give you one. And then I'm going to read the packet and see if I can figure out.
Yeah, read the packet. Read the packet.
Ingredients, folks.
It smells like a normal Tim Tam so far.
Oh, my God. So, I was about to say they've started saying composition instead of ingredients.
The packaging's a bit ugly,
It's a bit
frankly.
Ugly. And there's a couple. They're called Crafted Collection. There's a couple other ones. There's like a strawberry one or something. Let's see. Paprika extract.
Oh.
There's nothing to do with... Oh, Manuka honey,
2.2%. 2.2% of the biscuits,
but
Manuka
it's still
honey.
0.5 health stars. So that's it. All right.
Are they always 0.5 health star?
Yes, so you have to eat 10 to get to 5 health stars. I don't think honey and Tim Tams go very well together.
I like that.
Because it's not like honeycomb.
No, it's like
it's
honey actually.
And cream.
It's actually like it tastes like real honey. And honey's tough because it's one of the greatest things, but also there's a very fine line. If you put a little bit too much honey on your tongue, Jordan's putting it down.
Yeah, I had a bite and I'm not going to finish it because I'm not enjoying it.
I like it.
And I knew I wouldn't like it because I don't like honey very much.
You like honey?
No. The only honey I like is the ABBA song Honey, Honey.
Honey, honey, money, it's, money, no, money. It's
honey, honey, how he thrills me. Uh-huh.
You've can I have that. Another one?
Yeah, you can
have. I think they're actually pretty good.
Well, we might have
they're not okay, they're not too dissimilar to a regular Tim Tam, I gotta say.
Yeah, but they're dissimilar enough that they're just shit. But I don't know, man. That's my personal opinion. I'm gonna give it a 1.
Well then I have to give it a 10. Not that I think it's a 10 out of 10 biscuit, but because it can't have a score of, like, what's that going to give it? Like
5.5.
Yeah, I have to. What are you doing to me? Come on.
No, but come you on, can't man. Just pick your score based on my score. You have to just do what you think it is.
Give it 5.5.
All right, it's a 5.5. Guess who doesn't have his laptop here, so doesn't know where it sits on the...
Somewhere around Bob LaFlambeau.
Yeah. I mean, what a biscuit. Yeah, sorry about that, folks. I could before get the letterboxed list up.
Nah, who cares? We'll let them know later. They can look at it themselves.
Yeah, look at it yourself.
Do a bit of homework,
folks.
You might enjoy this biscuit with something like Bob LaFlambeau or Gangs in New York, which is, I think, a bit lower. So,
Gangs in New York is on a 4, I think.
There was one thing I wanted to bring up, actually, before we talked about the movie.
Yeah.
So, apologies to our listeners. We're doing a little bit of follow up after the biscuit.
Yeah.
I stayed up late last night watching some YouTube videos, which is not unusual for me.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe not unusual for you. Let me know. Send me a tweet. I'd love to hear from you. What do you watch at 1 o'clock in the morning? I watched that video you linked me. Jordan linked me a video.
Oh, how good is it?
Of a former La Cosa Nostra mafia man. So like a real dude.
Did you know, I'm really sorry to interrupt you.
Don't be sorry.
You got it spot on. Bob LaFlambeau has exactly 5.5.
Yes.
That's it. That's how well we know all of our reviews.
Except for the times when I literally forget the movie completely. That's happened a lot.
Yeah.
Anyway, what was that guy's name? He was from the La Cosa Nostra crime family.
Yeah, his name was Mario Gangsterari.
There you go.
No, it wasn't. I don't know.
Let's just go with that. Who was referenced in Goodfellas, right?
Yeah, Michael something.
Michael something. Looks like a pretty nice guy. Obviously, he came from an interesting world, a world that we're obsessed with. I watched his video on, it was Insider.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, you know, ex-mafia guy reviews gangster film scenes.
They have a whole series, like doctors, forensic scientists, all sorts.
And there's a few YouTube channels doing this, including Vanity Fair, because I then watched the Vanity Fair one with an ex-jewel thief reviewing heist films. So I'll recommend watching both of these videos. They're pretty fascinating. There's other ones out there too, like you said. But the main thing I wanted to bring up, which was relevant to The Irishman,
mm-hmm.
is that this guy, Michael something or other, sorry, dude, he says that not only did Frank Sheeran not kill Jimmy Hoffa, he also says that Frank Sheeran didn't kill Joey Gallo, which are two deaths that the film portrays Frank did do. Now, obviously, this is based on the book, which is...
I Heard You Paint Houses.
I Heard You Paint Houses, which is Frank Sheeran's kind of like, almost like a deathbed, not a memoir because he didn't write it, but it's his kind of deathbed confessions to his confidant lawyer, Charles Brandt. And Marty and Rob and Robert De Niro and stuff seem to be pretty convinced that he did kill Jimmy Hoffa, but this guy's saying that he didn't. So what do you think? Do you think we'll ever find out, you know, does it change anything about the movie?
No, I don't think so, because it's a movie, you know.
Movie's a movie?
Movie's a movie. It's like all of the movies we watch that are based on real events, whether it be Goodfellas and Henry Hill, right? Even this mob guy was saying that he didn't really play a big part, but that movie's from his eyes. So, of course, that's what happens. But that's what makes the movie interesting, right? And so in this case of The Irishman, that's what makes the movie interesting. Or even in the case of something like Black Mass that we watched, a couple of those killings didn't happen that way, and it's documented as such. But for the movie, sometimes you just got to break a few eggs that either, you know, that didn't really get broken.
Well, I think it's interesting too, because based on what he said, and same with the jewel thief guy, there's an element of real life, you know, truth is stranger than fiction a lot of the time, but you would never really be able to make a movie out of the actual events just because they would have happened, you know, too far apart or in different ways. And I think that's part of it with a lot of these sort of biopics or gangster films or crime. You've got to have that artistic license a little bit. To actually make a movie. But it does kind of annoy me because I also kind of enjoy accuracy and kind of a purist approach. So sometimes I'm like, ugh, you know, as if they did that.
Mm. And then we went and saw Bombshell, Alex with our friends a couple of weeks ago. And that's another thing where they're trying to tell a story that as if it's true.
Yes,
but
yes.
But then, you know, it's all about the vibe of the thing.
And then, well, it's interesting with something like Bombshell because Bombshell is presented in this sort of that, as we said, that Big Short style, which a lot of other feel like I, Tonya and like that we watched Official Secrets, which is that style as well. This kind of like it's a biopic, but it sort of leans towards trying to say this is actually what happened. It's kind of a different way of framing it. And it actually could be sometimes a bit dangerous in terms of something like Bombshell because like Margot Robbie's character, for instance, was not a real person.
Yeah.
She was based on a few people, I suppose. Mm-hmm. So it's a bit tricky because a lot of people would just kind of take that as verbatim.
Good Time by the Safdie Brothers. These guys are fucking masters, aren't they?
Wow.
Aren't they?
Yeah, yeah. I feel silly because I remember when this came out. It was when I was in London, actually. I think it was showing at the Prince Charles, like just around the time that I started.
Yeah.
So I didn't see it at the cinema. And then a few people in the cinema talked about it. And then I saw it was on Netflix. And I was like, oh, I should watch that. And I just never did.
Yep.
But this is the film directly before Uncut Gems. They've got quite a few movies, though, the Safdie Brothers, right?
Quite a few. I think three or four now. Or even more. But like movies.
Mm.
Like, because they had... honestly, I couldn't tell you exactly, but I know they had at least one before this that was what Pattinson got involved.
Right.
He saw a fucking poster or a still image from this movie, hadn't even seen the movie. The one prior to Good Time.
The one prior to Good Time.
Emailed them and was like, I need to make a movie with you.
This
picture is so evocative. I need to make a picture with you. And they... wrote a script around him.
Well, I'm going to have to look that up.
Yeah, he's so intense, Robert Pattinson.
Yeah, I mean, okay, we'll talk about him, I think, at length in a minute. What were your first impressions of Good Time?
Just that there's no way for me to talk about this movie without referencing Uncut Gems. But Good Time is also, they're just masters of creating chaos. Like, it's such a chaotic movie, but they're, like, masters at it. It's like a symphony that...
Yep.
You know what I mean?
I think it's one of those things where, like, you know, I do somewhat regret not watching it first because, you know, it's... Okay, one of the things about the Safdie Brothers is that it's exciting to be in concurrently living while they're doing probably their best work, right? Like, this is, like, 70s Scorsese. This is, like, 90s Tarantino. Like, we're in their moment, right?
Yeah.
So it's really cool. Make sure you go and watch these films because I'm sure their next one's going to be amazing as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a bit annoying because, like you said, it's hard to think about it or watch it without thinking about Uncut Gems, especially because we just watched it like 2 weeks ago. So that's probably going to be tied up a bit in the conversation. But it's one of those things where I think you can clearly see how they then got to Uncut Gems because this film has some similarities. It's maybe not doing exactly everything that Uncut Gems did, but there's kind of like that sort of through line. You can see that they're going to get there. Like you said, they're masters of making chaos, but this film was also sometimes a bit more reserved and relaxed. So it wasn't like, because Uncut Gems is basically turned up to 10 for like 2 hours pretty much.
Yeah.
This wasn't quite like that, but it had the elements.
Yeah. And it's like a nice, 100-minute film.
Yeah.
Boom, 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 boom.
Yeah.
That's your movie.
Yeah.
And it's... incredible. And again, similar to Uncut Gems, but it's anchored by one performance. You know what I mean? It's like got one like actor in it. And this one's actually got a few other bit players that are actors as well, similar to Gems. But the rest of them are just people and they're really interesting looking people. They don't act like they're actors because they're not tied up in this Hollywood performance bullshit. It's just... They're people and they're being captured on film. The way they shot this movie was incredible, where they just said that they were doing like a social work movie or something. Like, no one recognized Robert Pattinson. So they would just shoot it like on the train and they'd send him notes, their directions via text so that they wouldn't, so that there were real people in this movie, like on the streets. They wouldn't block off the streets like some big Hollywood production. They would just shoot it. Like they hired real cops to chase him through a real supermarket.
It's like, interesting because like I feel like, and that was the same with Uncut Gems. There were a lot of real people acting in it, which we found out about, like some of the heavy guys were like actual, I guess, quote unquote thugs. But it's funny because like it's one of those things where it's just like it sounds so obvious.
Mm-hmm.
But I think to pull it off, like they're doing a really good job of pulling that off. Because not just anyone can go on a film set and create a film, but at the same time, not just anyone can just like hire real people and do things so guerrilla, I guess.
Yeah.
And pull it off and have it go up against other like big budget polished Hollywood films, right? Because this is just as good, if not better, maybe for our tastes.
Have you seen The Florida Project?
Yes.
A similar vibe, right? Sean Baker does a similar thing where he just, there's a few names in that, but then he just finds people on Instagram or off the street.
And was that the one, his previous one was shot on a phone?
Yes.
But Florida Project wasn't Tangerine. Shot on a phone, yeah. Or some aspects were shot on a phone.
I think the very end of Florida Project was shot on a phone.
Yeah.
But yeah, these are really interesting films when you just get non-actors in them.
It's a different, you're right. And it's a different vibe to Florida Project, but it is a similar thing where they are tapping into something really personal and real. A lot of the time, something very, I mean, everyone's got a different experience depending on where you live, but something very, I think, personal about how we know people are growing up or living in different circumstances. Mm-hmm. And both of those films kind of tap into that a bit. And you can get a good insight to it that doesn't feel fake.
Yeah.
However they do it, like they must just understand. And this film felt, compared to Uncut Gems, which is obviously a bit more of a ridiculous kind of, bless you, ridiculous kind of story. Let's be honest, it's full on. This film feels much more like, I mean, you know, I don't know the Safdie brothers' history, but it's almost like they knew these people when they were younger, or this is based, it feels a bit based on more real events than Uncut Gems. Not that Uncut Gems isn't realistic, they're both quite realistic films, but Uncut Gems is like, you know, cheekily zany.
Yeah.
This is like, you know, oh shit, maybe this like happened, you know, in that way.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. So Benny Safdie, one of the directors, plays the brother, Nicholas.
Nickus. They're both Nickus, aren't they?
Yes.
So he's Nick Nickus and Connie and Nick Nickus.
Yes, that's right.
Connie Nickus.
And
so they're Greeks.
Yeah, and so Benny Safdie plays him because they had another project like 8 years ago that they wanted to work on, where they wanted to have someone like with a disability, but they didn't. They thought it would be exploitative to cast someone with like a real disability, and then like manipulate them into giving the performance that they wanted or whatever. So they then decided to just cast Benny, and he had this character in his head, but they never ended up using it.
Yeah.
So then years later, when they were writing this, they brought that back, and that's why he's in the movie. But it doesn't feel like a cheap directory gimmick or anything. Like his performance is incredible, actually. And it feels really honest and raw. And I think, I mean, you know, there's obviously different arguments for casting disabled parts, for and against casting like non-disabled actors. But I think personally, I really think it's a good performance, and it's quite an honest performance, and his chemistry with Pattinson is really, really good. And he, I mean, he's not in the movie for all that much, but his presence is felt throughout the movie. He's not in the movie as much as you think he is anyway.
Yeah, well, yes. And we can talk a bit about the plot, but you're right. I think that he does a really good job of portraying this character and the tensions between them, portraying how, you know, when you do have someone in the family with a disability, I mean, there's certain extra responsibilities to come with that. And that's kind of, it's one of those things, is it's like on one hand, and now we'll start to get into the plot a bit, I guess, you know, at the beginning of the movie, Connie takes his disabled brother to go and rob a bank. I mean, that's kind of like, what the fuck, dude? Why would you do that? So there's that aspect of it where it's like, that's shit. But then there's the aspect of it where you can tell he does really care about him, obviously.
Yeah.
And like I said, those extra responsibilities, the kind of, you know, it's not, if you can't find someone with a disability, it's a bit more worrying maybe than if you can't find someone who's going to be okay by themselves, so to speak. So that those kind of tensions play into the film in a really kind of, yeah, worrisome way.
Yeah. So basically the plot is that, yeah, there's this bank heist gone wrong. Nick gets put in prison. Connie doesn't like that, breaks him out of prison. And then hilarity ensues in any other movie, but it's not in this movie. It's really like serious, but also manic and chaotic and fun too, in a sort of odd way. It turns out that he hasn't. So Nick goes to hospital because he gets in a
jail fight,
and so prison Connie fight. Breaks him out of the hospital and takes him to this random old lady's house, and where there's a little, like, a 16-year-old girl as well. And then it turns out it's just some different guy with face bandages. And then they go on a little jaunt to an adventure theme park to try to find some more money. And then that's sort of where the movie progresses.
It's similar in Uncut Gems in the sense that, like, you get the impression that, like, for a lot of these characters – this is just kind of their usual days.
Yeah, and we're just dropped into
a moment. We're just dropped into a moment. And sure, it's probably like a pretty significant couple of days or whatever, because this is what the movie's focused on. So you'd hope it wasn't always this fucked. Mm-hmm. But like, you do feel, especially like the guy who he thinks is his brother, who ends up being just some fucking, I guess, alcoholic guy looking for a good time all the time, right? Mm-hmm. Good time. He probably does all this shit all the time. You know, that's just his life.
And they've gotten out of prison as well.
Yeah.
And this is them adjusting to their however many days on parole or whatever. So, and that's what good time means. Good time is a term used by people in prison for the time that they're on parole or whatever.
The time that they have to be good for.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. And they're often not having a good time.
Right.
Because they don't know how to.
Yes.
And there's all these rules and stuff. And so it's basically, the directors have said the backstory is that this is Connie's good time. That he's been in prison and this is how he's spending it.
So wait, Connie just got out of prison too?
Yeah, but presumably. You don't need to, that doesn't colour the way that you watch the movie.
Yeah.
But that's sort of what the title alludes to, if you know the lingo, which I didn't.
I didn't know that either.
But again, it's not one of those J.J. Abrams facts that really should have been in the movie to help you enjoy it. This is just, yes, it works knowing that. It works not knowing that.
Yeah, it's a bit more the more you know. And it's again, it goes back to the, you know, argument that we talk about a lot. It's, you know, it's not spoon-fed, so you have to kind of know or think about it a bit. And it also, you know, again, like you said, doesn't change it, whether you know it or not. It's still a powerful film and it still plays out. One thing that I was a bit confused about is, at what point does he realize he's got the wrong guy? Is it when he wakes up?
Yeah. We realize.
I was like, what?
Yeah.
And it's annoying because he does, it took me probably a minute or two because I was like, he does look like him though. I was like, and you know, because they shoot so shaky and dark and it's like, what's going on? What do you mean it's the wrong guy?
Yeah, that scene was going on for so long before I realized what was happening. I felt kind of embarrassed.
I was like, oh shit.
Because he sounds different too, but also he's still a bit groggy and whatever.
Well, and I guess, you know, well, exactly. And also he's been at that point out of the film for probably 20 minutes or so, the character, I guess, Benny.
And when he's been in it, he's just been unconscious in these bandages.
Yeah. So there's a lot of – I think this film does that well. There's a lot of kind of sitting with things. Like that whole sequence when he's getting him out of the hospital and then taking him there, like that's a long part of the film. But a lot of little things do happen there that then inform the rest of it.
Yeah.
One thing as well that I wanted to mention before I forget is – you know, they have the intro and then it has good time come up on the screen, oh, you know, like 5 minutes
in. I know
in.
What you're about to say. 17 minutes.
17 minutes in, it says Robert Pattinson. Like, they do the opening credits, basically.
Yeah.
And that's not opening credits. That's like, I mean, there's nothing else to call them, but I thought that was a really interesting decision. Yeah.
Well,
and
it's
really,
because
really good, actually.
Imagine having it over the start of the movie. Like, that so would be distracting. Like, yeah, you're just in the movie. And the only other time that I can recall seeing something like that is that penultimate – is it the penultimate episode of Breaking Bad? Ozymandias, right?
Yeah.
Where it's
– we watched that a couple months ago.
Where it's like the – yeah. The one where it starts in the middle of the shootout.
Yeah.
And – the credits in that episode start like 10 minutes in.
Like the actual credit thing or just the...
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, yeah.
But at least the name's coming up.
I think it's a really,
no,
really...
No, yeah, not the title sequence.
The name.
Because there's a little flashback at the start of that episode.
Right, and then they do the... Yeah,
and then
sure,
they do it,
sure,
and
sure.
Then the episode starts, and that's normally when the credits would start. But there's a shootout that they have to get through. And then literally like 10 or so minutes in, the credits started. And I listened to the Insider episode of the podcast on that. And they just explained there was nowhere we could put the credits. Like, because your mind goes Robert Pattinson. Your mind goes to the name. And then you're not fully – and it's such a huge challenge for those people where to put the credits anyway. But like physically, I mean on the screen. But if you're going to miss important information, it's not worth it. Put it later in the movie.
Yeah. And I will know 100%. And I think it's interesting because, like, I mean, you know, I'm a sucker for these things, quite honestly, because I find it fascinating. Mm. And, it, you know, the fact that we will now talk about credits for 5 minutes is funny to me.
Yeah.
But
well, credits where they're due, you know?
Exactly. And it is a hard job and a job that, like, you know, I mean, like, I don't fucking make films, but you get the impression that the majority of films, you know, they will just do what the quote unquote rule is. And the rule is, you know, maybe intro shot, title, and then do the leading actors. Mm-hmm. Like that's kind of the
while
formula.
While someone drives through the forest.
And most films wouldn't wouldn't think about it a lot. They would just say this is the formula, we're gonna do it. Why would we put the name in 17 minutes in? We're already into the movie, it doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
But thinking at it from that angle, the Breaking Bad angle, and clearly what they did here, thinking about it about like, you know, when do we actually put this in?
Yeah.
Maybe if at all. When does it work? And I think it comes down to, and this is probably one of the core things with the Safdie brothers, is with anything creative, you do have to sort of learn the rules before you can break them.
Mm-hmm.
And what I love about the Safdie brothers is they kind of break all the rules and really make it work.
Yeah, but it's only because they know the rules.
It's only because they know what they're doing.
So talking, sorry to talk about the Breaking Bad universe. I don't know why it's coming up so much this episode.
No,
but,
it's fine.
Better Call Saul's coming back, and El Camino came out recently. And the El Camino Insider
podcast.
We've
got to do an episode on El Camino.
We got to. The El Camino Insider podcast came out over the last week or so, and there's two parts. And literally,
wait a second. Do you listen to all these podcasts?
Just the Breaking Bad.
You don't listen to podcasts.
No, I know, but this is my favorite podcast because it's just the cast and crew, and they talk about all this behind the scenes shit. So they had the guy that is the colorist.
Yeah, I love this stuff.
Was on,
I love this stuff.
And he's talking about how he's there's that scene in El Camino where they're in the vacuum shop.
And there's
one moment, and they couldn't see it until they were looking at it on the big screen in the editing, like coloring it. Where there's like there was a flag in the background flapping around behind Aaron Paul's head that they just didn't catch in the dailies. They didn't catch in the editing room, but when they're coloring it, they're like, oh, shit. So they just, because they shot it on digital, they just froze the flag.
Really?
Because they're like, well, that if anyone notices that, they're out of the scene and we got to work for 5 whole minutes to get them back into this movie.
Wow.
So the minutiae of these...
Well,
artists,
and then, but it's interesting
because they're all telling a story. Even the people whose job it is just to make it look good, they're all serving the story.
And a lot of it, I think this is the significant thing, and this is why the award season fascinates me more and more every year, because I do delve more and more into the behind the scenes and the production of things because I love that stuff. And I think that you're right, everyone's telling a story, from the director to the colorist to the sound to the editing. It's all actually, and this is why when you really think about it, it's a wonder that these things get made, because there's a lot of people involved in it. A lot of the time, set designers, costumers, mm-hmm. makeup, it all has to actually come together. And obviously it's their profession, so they're all good at it. And yes, we make movies, we know how to do it. But there's a lot of moving parts and a lot of things to think about. And I think that thing with the flag is funny because they probably didn't notice it until they colored it, because maybe the coloring they did made it pop out more.
Yeah.
It's one of those things, and it's like you don't think about that. I was actually thinking about the coloring in Good Time when they had the – so they steal the money from the bank.
Oh,
and
yes.
They have this – what do they call it?
A dye
bomb.
Yeah.
And it's funny because that guy, the jewel thief guy, spoke about that in the video last night. So I was like, see, this is a real thing. the dye bomb goes off in the bag, which is kind of like this pinky purple powder. It goes everywhere. And the reason why I was thinking about it was because I got a bit annoyed because I was watching it on Netflix, which is where everyone watches it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was one of those things where, I mean, I don't know if you notice this stuff a lot, but the way that they colored it with that such a bright color coming through Netflix, a streaming service, you know, internet qualities aren't amazing. They basically Netflix does compress the hell out of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they say they're giving you HD content, but it's really compressed, so it's probably not – it's not as good as a Blu-ray, for instance.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Netflix is 1080p and a Blu-ray is 1080p, but if you talk to Daniel Lamin and me, we'll tell you that they're not the same fucking thing. And so there was a lot of clipping happening with that color on my screen. And that might have been my TV too, but, like, you know, I could see, oh, this is, like, clipping through. It's all just that – you know, there's not the dynamic range. So that made me think about the coloring of the film. And I'm going on a tangent now.
No, but you've actually brought it back around to the film itself.
I have brought it back around to Good Time.
There are some striking colours in the movie, though. Like that, the carnival ride scene, and also just Robert Pattinson's hair.
Before or after he dyes it?
Both. His hair is a character in itself. And he's such an interesting actor. His career...
Yeah,
I wanted respect him so much because he's just a guy from Twilight. If you go back 10 years.
Cedric Diggory before Twilight.
Well, yes. He's his little heartthrob teen fantasy boy.
Teen fantasy boy.
But he hated that shit. And you watch interviews even now. Like, if you even now go back and watch the interviews he was doing then, he's like, what the fuck is this movie? Like, he says that. He's doing press for Breaking Dawn Part 2 and he's like, I can't wait to be free of this film. But he doesn't have the Daniel Radcliffe problem.
No.
But Daniel Radcliffe is still he's doing the same thing where he just does batshit crazy movies. Like Swiss Army Man. Fuck yeah, Daniel Radcliffe.
And he's got a new one, Guns Akimbo.
Yes.
What is that? I've seen posters and I'm like, what are you doing, Daniel? This looks insane.
Yeah. Have you seen the trailer?
No.
Oh, it's batshit. So these two guys have made really interesting careers for themselves where they're just doing like indie movies, little weird passion projects. And then so someone like Pattinson now is doing the Batman.
He's
going to make a really interesting movie and get a great paycheck.
Oh, yeah.
And then imagine the batshit insane things he's going to do with that Batman money.
With the
honestly,
Batman money?
It's like Jake Gyllenhaal, right? He does that Spider-Man movie, makes a whole Marvel paycheck. Imagine the cool indie films we're going to get from him in the next few years.
Yeah. And I mean, well, no, you're 100% right. And I think it's really good as well because, like, you know, I'm glad that this is probably the first Pattinson movie I've seen. I mean, I saw Harry Potter, obviously. I've seen him in Cedric Diggory. That was a pretty small role.
Mm-hmm.
I never saw Twilight because fuck that. I was looking through this filmography. I haven't seen anything. He's now in Good Time, which I watched. I want to see The Lighthouse really badly. He's going to be in Tenet.
Yeah.
Or how do you say that? Tenet or Tenet?
Yeah. Tenet.
Which is the new Nolan film.
Hopefully they say it in the movie so we know how to say it.
New Nolan sci-fi film, which I'm not excited about, but I'm going to go watch it. And then the Batman. And the good thing about it is it doesn't even matter if he's a good Batman or not because he's already in the last couple of years done some interesting stuff.
Yeah.
He's solidified himself as like, hey, I'm a real actor.
Yeah.
Which, you know, that's not to say that he never was.
No.
But most people are going to say, oh, he's the guy from Twilight.
Yeah.
But
he's so
really
much more than that.
Really overcoming that. And it's taken a while to
But
be
he's
fair.
Even done other films too that I've not seen and I probably should have because this was the movie where people sort of sat up and were like, oh, he's making really interesting choices. Because also he's like downplaying his looks. And then he did that movie, The King, with Timothée Chalamet. Yes. And he does this ridiculous French accent.
Have you seen that?
No, I've only seen clips. And he talks about these little, you've got a tiny cock and big balls. this is the kind of out there choices that he's making, man. But this, honestly, one of the best performances I've seen. Not just from him, but just in general in a movie.
Mm-hmm.
He's just so intense. But the way that the Safdie brothers shoot their movies, like in some movies, this intensity would stick out like a sore thumb. But the whole movie's intense. It's at the right level.
They're really, really good at, you know, when I watch their films, like, it's almost like you get lost in shot to shot. Like, you know, it's not a one shot film, mm-hmm. but it's not clear sometimes when we're changing from shots. It's just